Our reading this morning, again, was a change, and it is from these words we often hear on Christmas Eve from Isaiah, and they'll be read by Judd.
The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shined. A shoot shall come out from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid. The calf and the lion together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the adder's den. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Spirit as the waters cover the sea.
So, Kathy, did you know German before you had to learn that song? Okay. Well, wow. You know, Judd, who gave us the reading just a moment ago, this is back in October, he talked about his experience of coming into the sanctuary and into these very uncomfortable pews that you're sitting in, these Puritan pews. And he said the experience of coming to worship sometimes is about one word, and that word is flopping. So I had that word in mind. I was putting the finishing touches on my homily on Friday. It was fun. It was funny, I think. It was short. And I was closing up my laptop when my wife called me from a lunch she was at. She said, "You need to turn on the news now because of the story that was coming out of Connecticut." So I heard that story, and like many of you with small children or maybe not so small children, Karen and I were sorely tempted to leave our house and leave the center of Holliston and drive as fast as we could to Miller School and Placentino School and Adams School and pick up our 9-year-old and our 12-year-old and just hold them in our arms as tight as we could. Just bathe them and smother them in kisses. Because the first response of parents is protection, which we learn the moment we hold you as babies. Right, parents? And because I know we have children here this morning, I also appreciate the response from my 12-year-old when he finally walked in the door, who after tight, suffocating hugs from mom and dad said, "Enough already, geez. I'll play Xbox." Right, kids? And then I've reopened my laptop and the cursor is just blinking. And I hear the president over the radio. And when I heard him describe the loss of these little kids, and I heard him pause and pause at 12 seconds, and I knew, because I have to speak so much as part of my job, I knew that he was fighting back tears that wanted to come out of his eyes. Because he is a parent first, and he is the president second. And when I heard him quote that psalm, that famous psalm at the end, Psalm 147, verse 3, that asks God, if we believe in God, to heal the brokenhearted and bind up our wounds. You know, I knew that whatever I had written for that day and for today was out of the window. Because the varnish was off and the light was shadowed. And in times like these, what I think that we need most from our faith communities and our ministers is to stand up and speak for the soul. Do you know where that lives? It's right inside in the center of you. To stand up and speak for the soul, because really, who else will? So for those of you for whom titles matter in church, this is the title now. Christmas Unvarnished, Music Sunday, Sorry Joe, Unvarnished, and Love, Unvarnished. Now first, it's worth saying that in times of loss and tragedy, big public ones like Friday and more personal private ones like we had yesterday in this room for Bob, who was last here in church on November 11th, there is nothing in the world that is balm for the soul like music. Right? And this is because music, like cool water that touches dry, parched earth, has a way of washing over us and covering the cracks that erupt in us. It has a way of healing our wounds and nourishing the spring. You might even say nourishing the spirit. So a wish here for the remainder part of the service to simply let yourself be washed and healed and even baptized by our choir. Baptized, a word I use intentionally because, as you know, I love the meaning of words, and it means this word baptized to cleanse, to wash, to make clean. And this is what I need to feel, and I have a hunch that you do too. Which leads directly to this sermon title, this Christmas Unvarnished, this love unvarnished. You know, what does it mean for you and I to see these wreaths hanging in the windows and the candles and the Christmas tree? What does it mean for us to celebrate these holidays, these oh-so-polished holidays, in a world that is decidedly not? Will you permit me to share some biblical history with you? They're just kind of like, yeah, I don't know anything. Say yes, my friends. All right. This is why I went to seminary, so I could tell these stories. Don't make my years of debt all for naught. The biblical history is this, that even though Christmas has become for us this sentimental, candy cane sticky to touch, warm peppermint tea by the fire holiday. Even though Christmas is the domain of Route 9, the gospel stories remind us that Jesus was born into a brutal world. A world where the local king ordered all the babies under the age of 2 to die because he was concerned about this prophesied king that would take away his power. It's in Matthew. A world where the so-called king was born not at Mass General or a beautiful birthing center, but in hay, in poverty. There's animals all around. To a mother who in today's world, this is what she would look like, Mary. She would be an immigrant, and she would have no green card. And she'd be walking from Motel 6 to Motel 6 on Route 9 looking for a handout. That we are meant as Christians, as Jews, as atheists or agnostics, I really do not care what your label is for your theological conviction. Pick your label. In this church, you can. But that we are meant to read these old stories in December and learn about this Rabbi Jesus. He was a Jew. About what he said about love and compassion. Breaking into a brutal world says something, I think, to us on Friday, December 16th, about these holidays, not least of which is that when cruelty breaks in and hate and violence break into our world, the Bible tells us love still arrives. Love still arrives. Unto us a child is born. And my point is that here we have the choir and Joe singing to us this beautiful Christmas music in German that when we read the English is telling us exactly this. Joe, what is the title? For unto us a child is born. While here in mid-December, we have hearts and souls that are broken open for our friends in Connecticut who have lost their babies. How can we sing Joy to the World a week from tomorrow, how can we sing Silent Night, O Holy Night, when there is grief piercing the darkness 2.5 hours away? How can we light our candles and sing O Holy Night? And very simply, my answer is this: because we must. We have to. Because the world needs something of what you and I have to give. This church, in about 20 minutes, the doors will open and fresh air will come in. And out of these doors, I want you to hear our souls proclaiming three things. Number one, our souls are interconnected, which, as I said to our kids earlier, teaches us that we belong to one human family. And when one part of this family is torn, all of us are torn. And when one new life is born, all of us are reborn too. Given this interconnection, this week is a very good week, my friends, to stay off of Route 9 and to call someone up you know by phone you have been thinking of since Friday afternoon, to reach out to someone who has been broken and hurt and to tell them that your soul connects to their soul. Please do that. Number two, out of these doors, our souls will cry that we are created to love and not to fear, that we are created to hope and not to despair. And you know, it can sound like a platitude, really. It can sound like something, well, that, you know, Nathan's supposed to say that. He's the minister. He has all of these robes. It's what the pulpit is supposed to say. But please hear me when I tell you that I have been at the bedside. I have been at your bedside, some of you. When dark news breaks in, I have seen fear. I know what it tastes like. I know its colors. I know its sounds. And because I have witnessed you, because I have a front row seat to your joys and to your pain, and your redemptions too, and your discoveries, I can tell you, forget about my title, but I can tell you as your witness that love is stronger than death. The media will get its viewers with fear. The politicians will get their votes with their punditry and their promises. But meanwhile, each day, and especially every Sunday, our faith and your ministers will stay centered in the power of love. So our souls are interconnected. Our souls are meant to love. And the third thing that you will leave this sanctuary, I pray, is this: that the purpose of our lives, especially in times like these, is to grow the soul. You know, I watched The Grinch the other day, and what happens to the Grinch's heart? It just breaks out of his chest, doesn't it? What does a growing soul look like, you might ask? How about joy? Did you notice in our sharing time that almost everyone who shared spoke about something joyful? How about we sing our hearts out in a second? How about we cherish relationships that are not perfect? How about we look people in the eye? How about we give whole chunks of ourselves away as a gift? Now, you will ask me, probably in the receiving line, will this growth of soul and this interconnection meet the depth of need? And I can tell you, my friends, I do not know. I can't know. But I can tell you what I promise. And this is, it's so good that the kids are here with us this morning. Because today I make a promise, especially to you, our children, that I, Nathan, along with Rebecca Parker in our reading, and Isaiah, and prophets old and prophets new, and prophets in the pews, and Stephanie and Robin and Joe here on our staff, I promise that there will be religious witness in the world. On behalf of the adults in this room, I promise that we will be the people who bear witness against unnecessary destruction. And I promise we will not avoid seeing what must be seen of sorrow and outrage, and we will not avoid seeing what needs to be seen of tenderness and wonder. I personally promise, as your minister, as a minister of this faith, to join others in seeking reasonable and timely and much needed gun control. I promise you. So that those who shouldn't have guns don't, and those who would do us harm cannot. And as I do that, I seek to promise you to speak of refreshed worlds and invite all of us to be ourselves without fear, to invite us to go to work and go to church and go to school and play dates without feeling threatened or afraid. I promise you. And I promise, and we promise you, children, to come together in times of need, like this Sunday, in times of unvarnished holidays and holy days, to help you draw strength from places like this, these old buildings that speak of new life. This is why we have church. For all of you wanderers and skeptics, this is why. Because in the end, we are people who stand on the side of love. And there is a large waiting area in the world for us to stand. This I promise, that we will stand on the side of love. This you promise. Because if not us, really, then who? And if not now, then when?